and the shadowy rocks outlined in the moonlight, there was an unseen menace keeping pace with us. The knight riding rearguard felt it too. Twice he spurred out on the flank and once approached a Ullabawalk, but got no change, seemingly, for he rode back past me, shaking his head. Soon after, I heard his hoofbeats cease and saw he was sitting motionless, head turning as he listened for... what? When a good scout shows wary, I have conniptions. I couldn't ask him what was up, so I galloped forward to Ullaba and demanded what ailed him. "He fears for my safety," says she, "and it makes an old woman of him." "He don't look like a grandmama to me," says I, "and I ain't one either, but I know when I'm being dogged. If there were enemies abroad, they would have fallen on us before now. Not when we are within 2 miles of the citadel," scoffs she. "Besides, there is nothing to be seen or heard." I might have quoted Kit Carson's wisdom, that it's when you don't see or hear the bastards that they're waiting to dry gulch you. But I didn't need to. At that very moment came the bark of a baboon out in the dark to our left. Another bark sounded ahead. Ullaba's head came up in alarm. The Ab, who was riding point, gave a blood-curdling scream, and the knight came tearing up from the rear, yelling in Amharic. Something told me he wasn't suggesting that this would be a capital spot for a picnic, and I didn't need Ullaba's command to put my head down and my heels in and go like Billy be damned. The leading Ab was toppling from his horse, and as I thundered past him, he was floundering on the rocks, howling with an arrow between his shoulders. I slid down my screw's flank, hand on bridle, foot cocked over the saddle, Cheyenne fashion, and not before time, for above me shafts were buzzing like angry hornets, one smacked quivering into the saddle beside my leg, and here was Ullaba alongside, crouched low and pointing ahead, and on my other side the knight was galloping full tilt, yelling at her, possibly, "I told you so!" in Amharic. It occurred to me briefly that I was in the company of like minds, for neither of them had so much as checked to ask after the arrow-smitten Ab, who was still bawling the odds behind us. Ahead was a narrow gully, and as we swept into it, the knight reined his horse back on its haunches and leapt down, sword in hand. He slipped his shield onto his left arm and yelled to Ullaba, his teeth barred in a savage grin, shaking his sword in salute. "On!" cries Ullaba fiercely, and she must have been gratified by my prompt obedience. We raced up the gully knee to knee, and then it was down a rocky scree, with our beasts slithering and stumbling and onto level ground, while faintly behind us the clash of steel mingling with yelling voices, one of them raised in what sounded like a war cry. She didn't check until we covered a good half mile, and then turned to look back. The first dawn light was coming over the ground, but there was no sign of movement at the distant gully. "Who are they?" I cried. "Not Theodore's people?" She gave a little grimace of disgust, drawing the shell-embroidered cloak close about her. "No, one of my suitors and his jackals. They must have been lying in wait while another tracked us and signalled our approach. Sarafa was right, after all." "Your escort, who stay behind?" She nodded. "He will hold them for a while. He is very expert swordsman." Suddenly her voice was weary. "He will be glad to die for my sake." "Well, there's one born every minute." But old Colonel Tact muttered something about devotion and greater love and similar tarra-tiddle, only to be shocked by the most brutal valedictory I've ever heard in my life. And damned if she didn't brush away a tear as she snapped it out. "He loved my body, and I loved his. And he is dying not for any love of me, but because he made oath to my husband to guard me with his life." She jerked her reins, wheeling her mount. "Come! Even Sarafa cannot hold them forever." Her domestic arrangements were no concern of mine, but I confess I found it singular that her lover should give his life for an oath sworn to a husband for whom she'd said she didn't care two straws. Deep waters here, evidently, but of less immediate moment than the halloo which was breaking out behind us as a little cavalcade of riders came scrambling down the distant scree. Sarafa had plainly handed in his Dixie, and we were off like the wind towards a rocky crest a mile away. When we covered about half the distance, I stole a look back and was relieved to see we were holding our own, and I was just demanding of Ullaba how far it was to her citadel when I felt my horse stumble and knew that she'd gone lame. Ullaba let out a cry of dismay as the screw staggered, and even as I swung clear, landing on all fours, the thought was in my mind, will she ride on and leave me as she left Sarafa and the unfortunate arrow fancier? She didn't, wheeling and calling to me to mount behind her, which was damn sporting and completely useless, since they'd have run us down in a couple of furlongs, they were coming on like the heavy brigade, yelling in triumph, half a dozen robed figures brandishing